everybody, and welcome to another episode of Two-Headed Game Master. I'm Cosmo, the first head.
And I'm Dane, the Weebo head.
The Weebo head. Two-Headed Game Master, I think you said it wrong, but we'll...
Weebo is a different... There's a Weeb and a Weebo, and
okay,
sometimes
we'll
they mean
okay,
the same thing.
I shouldn't have said anything.
All right,
so
that's
let you
a
do
finish
your
drink,
great.
Folks. Finish your drink.
Two-Headed Game Master is a podcast about writing, designing, running, and playing role-playing games, where we discuss our favorite hobby, share our thoughts with you, and even play some games sometimes. This time, we're talking about an idea, I guess.
Yeah, Cosmo, what are we discussing today?
So, as you can see from the episode title, we're talking about an idea that, for lack of a better name, we've called Game Master Bushido, or Bushido. I don't speak Japanese. I don't know how to pronounce it correctly. But, basically, I was working on a new role-playing project, a new adventure to run for the group. And I was getting excited about it, but I was thinking I needed some better organization for my stuff on the Game Master side than I usually do, because this thing is kind of big and there's a lot of interconnected stuff, and I didn't want to forget or mix stuff up. I wanted to have easy reference for it. And as I was going through some of this stuff, I'm like, why do I have to, you know, write everything out? Why do I have to, either copy and paste from other material if you're using it, or why do you have to, like, you know...
To interject here,
yes.
If you will let me, mainly for other people. Like,
yeah,
you
yeah,
were
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh, if this is going to be something to present to other people,
right.
I need to write it out because, like, you know, my
yeah.
shorthand, I can just rip it,
yes.
But... Like, rather do that work now than go back and, like,
yeah.
make it acceptable.
If I, and also, to a lesser degree, it is a little bit for myself. If I wrote out this document for this campaign properly, with, mm-hmm. like, every encounter with the proper notes and, like, monster abilities and stuff like that, then, in a couple years, because I forget stuff, you know, it would be there, legible and accessible. And so a lot of times, even when I'm just writing for myself, I try and write it as if this is something I might, you know, turn in,
mm-hmm.
like an assignment, or, you know, someday present to other people. And I think, like, well, I can't just write the Hydra grows new heads when you hit it, because I know what that means and I know how I'm going to run it, but no, I need to do, like, when...
Right.
When,
5 years
yeah.
later, you're going to be like, when does this...
Yeah,
how
does
many heads...
What counts as...
How long does it take?
Yeah, how much damage does it take for it to, like, count as cutting off a head? And then when it grows a new head, does it get some of that health back? Does it gain extra attacks? And mm-hmm. I have a pretty good idea how I want to run something like that. But all I want to do is just put, Hydras regrow heads... And make that, like, the feature of this monster. If you encounter this monster, it's gonna, you know, it's gonna have these stats. And that's its special feature.
Mm-hmm. So, that's what the...
Yeah.
Well, this where this conversation came from.
Mm-hmm.
So let's... let's describe what Bushido is.
Yeah.
And then talk about how it applies to, like, designing, and then how it applies to, like, running.
Yeah.
So let's, yeah.
Before you read the
Bushido.
Thing, I'll just qualify it, I guess. For anyone who doesn't know, it's a code, essentially, but, like, it was like a warrior's code of conduct, but also a mental attitude thing that samurai were supposed to hold to and like, aspire to in their, not just, like, in battle, but, like, their day-to-day.
Mm-hmm. Important bits, right? It's a code,
mm-hmm.
A moral code that is largely unwritten and largely followed.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It came about, like, history, obviously, like, centuries and centuries, you know, leading up to it, you know. Like, the idea of chivalry, except for
yeah,
cooler and
just,
better.
And, yeah, not European, and with a little bit more, I don't know. It seems like, and maybe this is just, like, how we in the West, you know, orientalized, yeah, just it seems like it's a little bit more spiritual and mindful than the concept of chivalry, which is a little bit romantic, but mostly has to do with just like military code of how knights interact with each other. Whatever. Anyway, so yeah, that's what Bushido is in real life, and we didn't have a better name for this idea as it applies to Game Master, so that's what we're calling it, but maybe we'll come up with another word while we're doing this, or we'll just leave it the way it is back to it later. Who knows?
I mean, we can also just change it to just the GM code.
Yeah.
Right?
Because
the code is more what you call guidelines than actual rules.
And that's kind of the point of it. Our thought behind this code, this attitude and way of thinking that we are trying to do ourselves, but we think it would be great if just like all game masters kind of aspired to this. And I would say that a lot of game masters probably do. But I don't know, we're trying to put words to it.
Mm-hmm.
Is the idea that with, you know, ignoring sometimes clearly or like heavily overwritten rules stuff, that you could just have like a little blurb or even a single word and just know what that means and like be on the right wavelength with your players, the game that you're running, and the material that you're using to to do it by feel, to use the force, you know?
The force, yeah. And, like, not necessarily know what it means in terms of what the, like, author and designer of the game meant, but, like, what does it mean to you and your group to tell the best story or whatever, right? That isn't a... betrayal is the word I was about to say, but I don't know if that's right, but, like, isn't a betrayal of, like, the good faith agreement of players and Game Master to have a fun, fair game.
Sure. It's also not a betrayal of, like, if you've purchased material. Say you purchased an adventure module, but it's not for the system that you're running, but you like the idea of the module. It's not a betrayal of the author's, you know, original intent to, like, read through it and be like, well, I'm not going to use this stuff as written. I'm going to take this character or this monster and just kind of interpret its vibes and then just kind of apply it. Apply it in good faith, like in the spirit of the thing, without necessarily caring about what the rules say. And I guess, all right, let me give another example. The stunning, like if you just write that, like, oh, this knight has a hammer, and so, you know, his attacks are stunning. They stun, you know. Instead of, like, if you're coming up with this stuff, maybe don't bother explaining that any more than it, you know, than just that word. And then leave it up to game masters who are ideally, you know, trying to practice this a little bit themselves. Be like, okay, so stun. Do they miss a turn? They miss a round of combat, whatever. Or maybe they roll some sort of, like, physical save to avoid missing, whatever. How you apply it is up to you. But I feel like if you were to apply this code, this, you know, this attitude to your design work, and we've talked about this before, every game master is to some degree a game designer.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're just running, you know, pre-written modules and stuff, you're doing some game design, and you're probably doing more than you think, and you know, the second you start coming up with your own stuff, you're a full-blown game designer. So, you know, I guess allow yourself to...
Well, let's take a step back here.
Yeah, okay.
So, when Cosmo pitched this idea to me, I had... My, like, brain did a bunch of different pings, right, of all these things, and, like, some of them we've talked about on the podcast. So, like, there are so many different games out there now. Like, we have reached a grand saturation point.
Mm-hmm.
That's not, like, a special term that I'm going to define. It's just, like, it's crazy
how many
different games there are, all with their unique little systems or piggybacking on systems, hacking other systems. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. It's also awesome. But what that has done has kind of created chaos where, like, each game could have a different stun mechanic, mm-hmm. right? And it's like, oh, this attack applies stun. Well, what does that mean in this game in this setting? I got to go dig through the rule book because, you know, we play several different games, mm-hmm. sometimes in tandem, like, you know, somebody, like, I'm running Afterlife, you're running Dangerous Spaceman or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So, to keep it straight, you have to pause and go look through the rule book and, like, you know, there's these little differences, right? Balancing issues between systems.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that's, like, kind of awesome, but also annoying, right? Yeah. Like, wouldn't it just be easier if it just said stun and you had an idea of what that meant? And I think people can, and, like, I hate to use the term good game masters, but game masters with a lot of practice and a lot of sessions under their belts.
Let's say confident game masters.
Thank you. Confident game masters just need that. They're like, oh, this attack does stun.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to do some quick mental math in my head, like a pro athlete, like, oh, how do I pass the puck or the ball or whatever to that player ahead of me?
Yeah.
They don't sit down and think, okay, well, the trajectory, the speed, they just do it.
Yeah.
Right? Quick, easy muscle memory, bam. So, like, that's what we're kind of talking here with, like, if game masters start settling and creating this, like, code of Bushido, then game designers and game masters and, you know, player groups don't have to sit around discussing the rules and, like, making sure that, like, there's balancing issues addressed and stuff. It's just, like, the game master can be like, okay, stun, I know what that means.
Yeah.
And if it's not perfect, but, like, it's fun and it's, like, you know, balanced enough, that's good enough, right?
I'd also say that, like, part of this, thinking about, you know, the stuff that I'm trying to design right now, and I was like, I don't want to write all these stat blocks because I know, you know, what this means, but if I were to present it to someone else or come back later, I don't know. If you had this attitude, right, you could put a monster there, like a, you know, a wyvern, right? Oh, it's got wings, maybe there's a little picture, and from the picture, like, you wouldn't even necessarily have to write flying. You know? It's just like, oh, you see it? It's got wings in the picture.
What are those for?
It fucking flies. Then, you know, if you're, what I feel like I would do, what I would try to do, and what I hope other people would do, is if I, you know, present something that's just like a clear little picture of the thing with a name and like a difficulty value or, you know, whatever system you're using with that, that part you can't really get around. There's got to be, the players need to know what they roll, right? And what they roll against. But the minutia is what I'm trying to avoid having to, you know, re-articulate every time to clearly codify with every single example. Just be like, oh, you see, it's a wyvern. It's got difficulty whatever to hit. It does this much damage, and that's it. And you can see from, like, a little picture of it and a brief little description, an evocative description, not a rule, not a written rule. They're like, okay, this is a flying creature. I'm going to say probably harder to hit with a sword, but if you shoot it with a bow, no penalty, right? And just, you know, trust the game master to kind of interpret that in good faith, and, you know, trust the players to trust their game master that the game master is going to, you know, honor this commitment of it being, of the world making sense, and of them being like an arbiter of the world making sense. And so, you know, if they're fighting a flying lizard and they try and hit it with your sword and you're like, ah, it's harder because he's flying around and he doesn't want to be hit with a sword. He likes to swoop down and get you. But if the other character's like, I shoot it with my bow, great. All that makes sense, just, you know, conceptually. When we imagine, when we, like, run the simulation in our collective imagination, those things just make sense. And so my kind of belief, what's kind of at the core of this episode and this attitude of Bushido as it applies to game masters, is that that should be enough. And that in the written material, you don't need any more than just, like, a basic description.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, the two or three numbers that are necessary for, like, the dice mechanic.
Right, or the,
function,
like, the goalposts that don't move.
Yeah.
Can we zoom in on that example for a
little
bit? Because that is, like, the core of this conversation. I agree. I think the way we collectively, as a community of gamers, have chosen to engage makes, like, that, or brings up a couple problems with that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of, like, just collectively running the simulation, that all making sense. So the first thing I would say is, and, you know, this might be a little too hyperbole, but, like, the reason we started writing it all out, right, is because designers have an idea of how they want the encounter to go, right?
Yes.
So they're like, ooh, you know what would be cool for this wyvern is if swords are not the way to kill this monster.
Yeah.
So I'm going to write a rule that says that
and,
like, you know, incentivize using bows or ranged attacks or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that's cool and I think that's how this encounter should go, right? So boom, a rule pops up.
Yeah.
Right? And then the other reason on the player side of, like, why we're where we're at is, like, a fairness aspect of, okay, so I attack this wyvern with my sword. The game master says, ooh, disadvantage because it's a sword.
Yeah.
Player's like, well, what? Why?
Yeah.
The fuck? Right? If there's not a rule that says that,
I should be. It doesn't say I can't hit him with my sword.
You know, airbutt rules. It doesn't say that I can't hit him with my sword.
Yeah, it doesn't say a dog can't play basketball.
Right? So the game master has a lot more to defend in terms of, like, well, I think it says that in the description that it flies around, and I think a flying creature is harder hit with a sword because it's flying.
Yeah.
And then the player's like, well, I would have, like, I rolled my disadvantage dice, right? And I didn't like say, wait, hold on, let's talk about this rule. I did it, but now that I failed, I want to
want to litigate that failure into a success
because I don't think I should have failed.
Right. Because if I had taken the good dice, I would have hit.
Mm-hmm.
But because of disadvantage, I missed.
Right. And so
which
now
is the intent,
I'm angry.
Right. Yeah. Which is the intent of the encounter, but if the rule isn't stated, and so that idea is kind of what we're trying to conceptually get away from.
Right, which is where we come back to the Bushido, like, it was a moral code as well, right? Like,
which is why, that's why I mentioned this, like, this compact of trust between the all participants, not just the game master, players as well. You know, the game master has a responsibility, which we've talked about. Like, they're the arbiter of the way this world works, and, like, presenting a not necessarily realistic, but a consistent simulation for the players to, you know, join in with their imagination.
Right. And we've all heard the stories, like the legends, if you will, because, you know, in our short experience, I guess, compared to other people. And mainly us game mastering. It's like, we've never had a dick game master who, like, really jerks us around. But, like, there's legends out there about him.
Yeah. And, you know, you usually hear that in the context of, like, the early days of the hobby in, like, the 70s and 80s and the, you know, the concept of a you know, a sadistic or, you know, unfairly punishing Game Master, whatever. But when people talk about, like, the OSR, this like, old-school tradition of gaming, new games, modern games, but written in this old-school...
style.
Yeah, persuasion, I guess. This is a thing that they talk about a lot, but where like, most of the time you're not rolling. It's more about, like, describing. And if you describe your character doing something stupid, then the Game Master punishes you for it. But if you describe how your character effectively, you know, solves a problem, mm-hmm. then, one, you don't go into combat, and you also don't usually need to roll for it. And most of the time, the only time you roll in this, like, old-school tradition is when you're in combat, or there's some sort of, like, physical test or something. Like, you know, you guys got to climb this cliff face. Okay, well, all right, you guys are going to climb the cliff face, but I'm going to have you give me some rolls to see how long it takes. I'm going to gamify it in that way. Mm-hmm. Give me some rolls to see how long it takes, and only on a crit fail is someone going to, like, fall and break their leg, and now nobody's getting up the cliff. You got to deal with that. Mm-hmm. Outside of stuff like that, outside of obstacles and combat situations that need to be rulified, most of the time it's just like an exchange of description. And that being the sort of that being what you're trying for. That's the aspiration of the old school Renaissance tradition of role playing games. It fits a lot with what we're saying here, because for that to work, everyone has to be just like imagining together and treating this as if, mm-hmm. you know, treating it as if it's real and with a common understanding of the just like the way things work in this simulation.
Right. And then, right, when people break that,
mm-hmm.
it starts this arms race. And then, like, if you didn't just get, like, prickles or some sort of physical response to me saying that, because, like, that's exactly what's happening now in, like, you know, the geopolitical landscape, then, you know, maybe you should tune in a little more to that. Because, right, it's all well and good when people follow the rules.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you don't need all these guardrails. And then the second somebody says, well, wait a second.
What if I just did this, because who's going to stop me?
Right? It's then, not...
Well, now we got to put guardrails up.
Yeah.
We need to have defense systems in place for that. And then in the context of a pen and paper game, well, in the context of the real world, Europe sends troops to Greenland.
Right? And then in the context of pen and paper games, you have to write out every single rule about, like, this is what happens when you're stunned. Mm-hmm. This is what happens when a creature is flying.
Right.
Etc. So that's, yeah. I can understand how we got to this point of every little game needing to write out every little rule, right? Yeah.
I've heard that I forget which one. I think it was Advanced Dungeons & Dragons, not Basic Expert, which is sort of second edition. The early editions are confusing to me. But whichever one Gary Gygax wrote all by himself, which is full to the brim of rules where he sought to address every specific situation, I think that's kind of the beginning of this. That's mm-hmm. kind of the beginning of Split.
I mean, I was going to hang it mostly on D&D.
Yeah.
I mean, like, they certainly fucked us.
Because it... Yeah, there was an idea that, like, everything needed to be... backed up by a rule, or that there needed mm-hmm. to be an answer to every situation rather than, you know, rulings over rules. And so, you know, really nuanced and I'm missing the word.
Subtle.
Not complicated.
Complex. Explicit.
Explicit, yeah. Explicit is good. Really explicit answers to every situation needed to be there, because I think at some level there was there was a lack of this like compact of trust, mm-hmm. right? There was an idea that, well, what the game master is doing is unfair. And there was also an idea that, well, like, players will optimize the fun out of a game by trying to, you know, build the best, you know, the most effective possible character build. Right. That,
and I think that has only gotten worse.
Yeah,
like,
generally speaking.
Especially, like, with video games, like, players will fucking straight up, you know, be the... against their own, like, entertainment and fun for some reason.
There's videos, several, about, like, why everyone ends up a stealth archer in Skyrim.
Skyrim, right, yeah.
It's because there is a... In the code of the game system, there is an efficacy to that that is better than almost anything else if you... continue to pursue it. It also protects you the most. And
well, and it's the fastest, and, right? Yeah. To level up other shit.
To level up other shit. And so it's sort of an inevitable thing because, you know, humans recognize patterns and engage that pattern recognition to optimize. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we'll optimize out of it. So stripping as much of the codification out of it as you possibly can and trying to return to this compact of trust is basically what we're advocating for. But what that requires is for primarily the game master, but also their players, to put their brain, reconfigure their brain into this headspace of, like, do things as they make sense, and then, you know, oh, this character, this monster hits with a stunning attack, or mm-hmm. this monster flies, or this monster, you know, is immune to fire. Without writing those things down, just, like, apply them as they make sense.
Yeah. I have a great segue into using the code of Bushido to run your games.
Okay.
Do we have anything more to say about designing?
Not really. Just reiterating, I guess. Okay. Yeah, in terms of designing, what I feel like we're trying to say is, on the design side, if you adhere to this, what we're essentially doing is giving you permission to do less. And if you're making a monster or writing up a character or even, like, a location, like a dungeon, whatever, that not everything needs to be clearly, spelled out, labeled, or, gamified. Not every, like, ability or feature or spell or whatever needs to be fully gamified. You could just do it the way you would have done it, like, think the way you would have done it when you were a kid. Before you knew mm-hmm. game systems, where you're like, here's a cool monster, and if I were gonna pretend to be this monster, and my friends were gonna pretend to, you know, hit me with swords and whatever, like, how would that work? Do it that way. A return to just, like, you know, imagination backed up by the basic framework of the way things work.
And if designers trust in the code and the game masters follow the code, the players will follow the game masters. There might be some friction in the beginning, right? You know,
yeah,
players like, well, why do I have to roll a disadvantage with a sword? Where does it say that in the rules?
Right.
So this is where I say, think, like,
it doesn't, because we don't have rules for everything. We have vibes, but we have consistency.
Which is, we have consistency. And I feel like the way we've done it in the past, although necessary 30 years ago, it is now 2026.
Yeah.
We do not have to do it that way anymore. I think continuing to do it that way, where every little system in their own, like, you know, made up universe has to rewrite all these rules explicitly, is a waste of time and energy, and it's doing a further disservice to the game. This is where, Brian, you can get prepared to finish your drink because of our school that we went to, Remsel. Tap the sign.
Tap the sign.
Having it written out like that has held the hand of a lot of game masters. A lot of people are game masters that might not have been game masters, and that's great.
Yeah, that rocks. The amount of material that's out there, the amount of like instructional content on YouTube that not only tells you kind of how, but also just encourages you to do it and
well,
to try.
And I think that's why we can dispense with explicitly writing out everything.
Yeah.
I mean, because there's so much guidance out there now.
Mm-hmm.
For example, our fucking podcast.
Yeah.
That...
I do like, though, just this is a fun thing that I do, is I imagine our podcast is something we're just making for Brian.
Yeah, pretty much. So, game designers can stop holding game masters' hands.
Yeah.
Because what it's doing is it's not teaching them how to be a game master.
Yeah.
It's teaching them how to follow the rules.
And there are games that, like, I feel like without, you know, without articulating this or trying to, like, put a word like Bushido on it, like Knave and Tunnel Goons, where, like, they don't codify everything. They put the basic framework in front of you and they say, like, you know, if it's harder, change the number to this.
Mm.
And, you know, use very few numbers, very few rules as written. They just don't, like, explicitly state that this is the intent. The intent is to imagine together, right? Some people are designing this way already. I think that rocks. But some people are still designing in systems that I frankly consider to be way overwritten.
Right. Like, I think D&D is a required reading.
Yeah.
But you should never be playing in D&D. You know what I mean?
We basically never do. Required reading is a good...
So,
yeah, especially if you have any interest in, like, the history or why things are the way they are. But also, things don't have to stay the same forever. Right. This is a new discipline.
Right. Because, it's teaching game masters how to follow the rules. So when they run into a situation where it's like this edge case situation and, like, maybe it's in the rules.
But the interpretation of the rule is a little muddy.
Yeah, you got to spend time digging it up.
Yeah.
Then you got to interpret the rule because it's ambiguous because, like, yes, it's an edge case, but, like, you know, it could be, like, one of three things. What happens with game masters these days, I feel like, and again, we don't have unlimited experience, but when they know that the rules, there's a rule for it, they freeze up and it pauses the game and it slows stuff down, right? They don't have that confidence that we talked about earlier of just like doing the mental math quickly, getting the game moving again without, you know, accidentally, you know, fudging the, like, balance for the rest of the game. And myself am guilty of, like, making a quick rash decision on something and then two sessions later being like, well, that fucking broke the game.
Yeah, whoops.
So,
yeah,
you're not going to get it right every time. But that's why I think we should, you know, start creating this code of Bushido for when you're running the game, right? Having a trust between the players and the game master.
Yeah. And we've talked about this before, but we're, well, I guess ironically, because a lot of this is about not bothering to codify everything, but we're codifying that idea here. And
put it on the board.
If we codify this attitude, this sort of like code, this aspirational, you know, like if you want to be cool, you'll aspire to be like this. We're codifying that. Everything else is essentially covered under that umbrella. And, you know, then you can run games, unless you got another segue.
No, that was the segue.
Then you can start running your games like you would have ran them when you were a kid. Like, if someone had told you, hey, you can do this when you're, like, 10 years old. And some, I know some people did really start when they were 10 years old, but they probably started with rule systems and with older players kind of coaching them through the basics of it. But imagine what you would have done if someone had told you, like, this is a way you can play, and said you don't need any rules.
Right. The encounters, like, ooh, I mean, we actually have this on our, like, topic list of, like, D&D for children or role-playing for children.
At some point, real quick, so I was watching a video at home, and my oldest son is, you know, he's old enough to see what's on the TV and, like, recognize what it is and ask me questions about it. And just, like, it was a guy paging through an RPG book. And I was curious about it. But in the background, like, on the table were a bunch of dice and, like, note cards and pencils. And my son was asking me, like, oh, what are those? And he's four. So I kind of explained to them that, like, they're for a game. And when you get a little older, I'll be happy to show you and we can play it together. And he's like, I want to play it with you now. And I was like, I love that. I love that so much. I don't think you're quite ready. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, as soon as we put a toe in those waters, we'll be making content about it.
But, like, for a while there, I don't think they transferred to Blue Sky, but on Twitter there was, like, a 5-year-old DM channel where it's, like, a guy was just, you know, having, yeah, like, those moments with his child, but then he was, like, you know, tweeting them and being like, here's what my son thinks about this, you know, this rule in D&D. It's like, yeah, perspective from a 5-year-old is crazy.
And perspective from a 5-year-old, I think, is maybe, you know, they're going to say some stupid things because kids are idiots, and they're not going to understand the intent of some of this stuff, but they also might, like, cut through some...
Yeah, it's like unbounded, you know, like, oh, shit, that 5-year-old just taught me something.
Yeah, they might cut through some of the sludge and be like, well, so what's the nugget at the heart of this? And
exactly.
Yeah, if you approach stuff with that way. Anyway, that was derailing. So, applying this to running your games.
Yes, the creating the code of trust. So that way when there is a... not necessarily a disagreement, but a... ambiguous situation. I don't know. Whatever. When the game master and the player are like, wait, how is this going to go? How is this encounter going to go? Right? The rules are not clear on this. The Bushido there would be, you know, game master makes a call.
Mm-hmm.
Players can have input, but ultimately it's a game. So, like, the game master's not there to jerk you around and, like, you know, punish you. So, like, well, it's flying, so it makes sense to me that swords, it's harder to hit with a sword.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then you can make a lot of arguments as a player and be like, okay, well, like, actually, have you ever tried to hit a target with a bow and arrow? It's pretty hard.
There's a... almost exactly that in the second D&D episode of Community, the one that's still on the air because Chang isn't in blackface, where I forget his name, Professor, the guy from Breaking Bad.
The, what, Bryan Cranston?
No, the enforcer, the criminal guy, Mike.
Mike.
Hank is the DEA officer.
Yeah.
Mike is the Professor Hickey in Community. Okay. Where and Abed is running the game in a kind of old school way where characters have their character sheets, but he does all the rolling for everything because he has repeats of their stats and stuff behind his screen. And they don't know how to play. So when he says, I do this, Abed makes the roll for him. And he's like, he rolls and is like, oh, you fail. And Hickey's like, listen here, pal. I've punched about 1,000 hearts in my life, and I never tripped and fell. And he's like, well, have you ever been a 2-foot-tall halfling trying to punch a 6-foot monster while running through a jungle? You might want to have a look at your character sheet there.
Yeah. Right. So, yeah. Like, oh, it's a lot harder, or it's a lot easier to hit something with a stick than it is with an arrow. It's like, yeah, true. But also, your character is an archer. So, like... they're really good at hitting shit.
Right. And that's why, like, you do need some rules. That's why you need, like, a strength value versus a dex value.
Yeah.
Because, you know, are you shooting with a bow or are you swinging a sword? And that modifies your results, ideally. It's supposed to modify your results in a realistic way.
And I know I'm fixating on this one example, but I think it's a good example.
I think it really is.
So, like, as a game master, what I would say to, like, oh, why you're good with a sword, it is not about your skill with the sword. Mm-hmm. It is about the wyvern's agility about avoiding the sword. Mm-hmm. A lot easier to avoid that sword.
Without a system that, like how D&D has the full, you know, six attributes plus bonuses plus everything else for monsters. They all, like, exist in the same simulation. Without having to do that, you're like, yeah, you're good at swords, but you can't reach something that's 10 feet in the air.
Yeah, it's just not possible.
So that's why I impose the disadvantage rule on you hitting him with a sword, because you tried, but he kind of swooped over you, and it was just, you missed. You missed because he was too high up. And then he makes an attack on somebody else. Maybe you hit the next time, and that's because he swooped down.
Right. You know? Or, like, you know, maybe as the player, they're like, okay, well, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to not move for my action, or, like, I'm not going to move this turn, and I'm not going to use an action this turn. I'm going to ready an attack.
Yes.
The next time the wyvern swoops down at me,
swoops low enough,
I'm going to be ready. Hit him. And then you're like, okay, great. Disadvantage, gone.
Maybe even advantage. Good plan. Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah, you prepared. Wyvern's going to go through his turn. Maybe he hits somebody else, whatever. On your turn, I've taken the penalty away. And that returns to that, like, OSR idea, where if you describe
something, you know, smart and accurate in the world. Yeah,
if you describe well and are playing in the space, right, if you're imagining good, as opposed to just, like, looking at your character sheet and being like, what buttons on my character sheet can I press right now?
Yeah.
That's what we want to get away from, essentially. And that's very OSR. So maybe this Bushido and OSR thing are more closer linked than I thought. But, yeah. It's, like, I would amend the rules in that situation based on engagement with the simulation, imagination at play.
Right. And so, like, the decisions that you as a game master make in the run of play, right, when they adhere to the code, right, should be rewarding to your... Eventually, your players will start to, like, also adhere to the code, because it's rewarding to adhere to the code. Because, like, if everybody adheres to the code, it eliminates a lot of need for, like, all these guardrails and, like, the, oh, well, let me look that up in the 100-page book, right? You can get away from that, and it becomes a much more, well, you know, in the most idyllic, you know, sense, where we got our heads in the clouds right now, or I got my head in the cloud right now.
I do a little bit.
Like, it becomes a lot more back and forth, less time arguing about rules, and just, like, oh, that sucks for my character. Well, here's what I'm going to do about that. And, like, I'm going to make a joke, or, you know. Mm-hmm. And, like, instead of being like, well, what the fuck?
Yeah.
That doesn't... my character sheet says that I'm really good at gun.
Yeah.
Why am I not good at gun?
I think that's why I've been gravitating over the last couple of years so strongly towards, like, Borg hack systems and now, like, Tunnel Goons. Because they simplify so much, and, like, simplification on its own is not necessarily a virtue, right? But they simplify what's on your character sheet, so that I think this kicked off really fucking well. I think all of ours kicked off well when we did that Siege whip round late last year. For listeners, you should go check those out if you haven't. They're all four. They are a blast. And we had a great time.
All rippers, no skippers, as they say.
And we had a great time talking about our thought process and what worked and what didn't afterwards. So I highly advise that series to listeners. But I ran Tunnel Goons, or modified Tunnel Goons. And what I'm looking at running next is another modified Tunnel Goons. And the reason I like it isn't because I don't have to do any work as a game master, because I've simplified everything to four stats and a single difficulty value. That's great, right? really lowers the like mental overhead for running. But the thing that I'm finding that is really great about that is it just like it takes buttons off the character sheet, where if you especially if you play D&D, and especially if you play D&D through D&D Beyond,
yeah,
because then you're looking at your character sheet on a laptop and you're looking at everything as a button that you press to solve a problem, and then when it doesn't work you're like, why that button didn't work? As opposed to these ultra simplified systems where everyone is then just like describing cool stuff, and then when it after you describe, I'll be like, okay, give me the roll. I might fucking change things based on your description of your action. If you take into account that the wyvern can fly, I'm gonna remove that disadvantage penalty, which I think is the correct penalty to apply to trying to hit a flying creature with a sword. But if you come up with something fun, or even just like, well, I was going to say, if you come up with a good idea or even just a fun idea, you're like, my character, you know, jumps up on this rock and then makes a leaping attack. I'm like, okay, yeah, no disadvantage. Give it a try.
This is a possibly a future episode topic, but the critical thinking that this, like, Bushido code or, like, simplifying stats and, like, the design aspect of, like, you know, being encouraging description over button pressing.
Yes.
And like the critical thinking that that requires is something I think the game has lost a little bit. And then like we can talk about like as a society and like with the technological advances and like, you know, all of that. And like then we can get into like, you know, teachers would probably, you know, if we got a teacher in here, would love to talk about like AI use and stuff. Anyways, one point that I think, I guess this should have been in the designing segment, but the history and like how we got to this point, technology has not, or it exacerbated the problem, right? And then like, you know, all these rules needed to be written.
But it connected so many people and like made it accessible. Well,
that's what, yeah. So like all these rules needed to be written is because it was such a small community. And so like you would be in person with random people and like,
that's
you know,
true.
You weren't like friends with these people necessarily, right? This is like a hobby group where you meet at like a basement of like a hobby shop or something, right? But now with the internet.
Conventions were, and they still are a big deal, but like playing D&D when that was one of the only games there, you played at conventions, and so shit
and
had to be codified.
Because if there were disagreements, you couldn't just walk away and go find a new place, right? But you can now, right? Whether it be...
Or like, you couldn't come to a convention table with your wildly overpowered character and be like, yeah, I don't know, I mean, do that, when that like ruins the fun for everybody else, so rules had to be adhered to.
Right, but now with the internet the way it is and just how prevalent the hobby is, you can easily walk away from a group, from a game master, from a player base.
There's whole ass like Tinder for game groups, apps out there, things you can join. You can pay for people to run something for you if you want, or you can find just like people who meet your schedule through the internet.
So with that availability, I think that's where this Bushido code is really important because if everybody follows the rules, you can find a group that, you know, follows the rules to your like comfort zone. Like maybe you're more of a rule follower, so like you want a very explicit game that writes out every little rule and is followed by everybody. Maybe you want somebody or a group that is more free with the rules, is like, we're going to use D&D framework, but like I got a homebrew, you know, we're doing little forest creatures, and like, so like build your characters in the stats of D&D, but then like then throw the books away because we're on my book now.
And for that first character, I would say well, there's wargaming, you know, if that's really what you want, because it does seem like since the since the instantiation of this hobby, since the 70s, we've moved away from a focus on, like, intense tactical combat and well gamified tactical combat towards, you know, big high fantasy narrative stuff. That's what, you know, like, that's why I don't like watching Critical Role, is because the focus is on this big story thing and on characters, but it bogs down every encounter in the game mechanics of Dungeons and Dragons. And if it was just a group of friends with a much more simplified game system, they are friends, but they're also tremendous actors, and that's part of why it works so well. But the thing that doesn't work for me is because litigating encounters is boring to watch. Yeah. I feel like the entertainment value, the value proposition of that is really weak for me, because that is the part that's not fun, especially if you're not participating in it. Which, I mean to turn this into a thing about why I don't like Critical Role. Critical Role is cool. I'm really glad it exists. But as entertainment, this is the reason I feel like it doesn't hit for me.
Yeah. So, yes. Conclusions, I think. Where we are ready to conclude.
Yep.
Okay.
We intro this idea, or conclusion, then recap. Or same thing?
Recap, then conclusion?
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, we intro this idea. We were trying to come up with and sort of put a name to this attitude and way of thinking that we believe is good for game masters, and then to a lesser extent players. Players have to buy into it as well. We kind of defined Bushido in the traditional sense, and then we kind of changed that, this idea of like this mindful warrior spirit as applied to pen and paper gaming, which allows you, first as a designer, to dispense with the need to gamify everything and codify every rule situation and edge case, as long as you are just kind of leaning into this spiritual principle, which is to, you know, simulate accurately for the sake of everyone having a good time. And then we moved into applying this to the running of games specifically. Two different things closely linked: how you design material for yourself or potentially for other people to use, and then how you rip it at the table.
Yeah. So my conclusion is, I understand why we are at the point that we're at in the hobby, and I think we can change it if we're intentional about it, because I think it could change for the better. Designing things to be less explicit and more implicit, and like following this code, starts teaching players and game masters better critical thinking, so running becomes smoother.
Yeah.
Cause instead of a bunch of rule checks and litigating rules and all that crap, you come to an agreement between game master and players that makes it fun and smooth.
Yeah.
And like the critical thinking is a big piece. If games stop holding the game master's hands, I think it was necessary. I think it was important. But it's 2026 now.
Yeah.
And there's so much content on YouTube and this podcast, and or just podcasts in general, like this podcast, where people discuss things like this. So there no longer needs to be a hand-holding written in the design of the game. If game masters need that, they can get it elsewhere.
Yeah. I'd say so. I'd say my conclusion is the stuff we talked about off-air and a little bit on-air. What this has done for me is give myself permission to let some of what I felt like was a requirement go and finish writing my material for my upcoming thing in a way that's just like, that's less explicit, less codified, less for, you know, less concerned with fully explaining itself and just being evocative and helpful.
Yeah. I know we just did conclusions and already did the recap, but I did want to bring this up. Is one of those things that this conversation pinged for me when you brought up the topic was like our experience with, one, people like running our early Afterlife, And then two, like, you know, when we wrote Adventures and then like some people took them away and they're like, we can't run this.
Yeah, we don't know how. We don't understand.
Right? It's like, it was something that we didn't think about. And like, I think that ruined us a little bit. And so then we focus hyperly on being explicit and explaining things for other people to understand.
Right.
And
I agree. I think that hamstrung, like, you know, the version of Afterlife that exists right now is, it's got a lot of that in its DNA. And maybe it didn't need it.
Right. And I think we took the wrong lesson from that of, oh, we need to hyper explain and, you know, make a rule for every edge case, where the real lesson was there's a lack of critical thinking in this hobby. But anyways, yeah, that's a little off topic. That should have been brought up earlier. I didn't. Mm-hmm. I already flipped the card. Let's get out of here.
All right. So, yeah, that about do it for this episode of Two-Headed Game Master. As always, you can head over to 2hgm.com. If you like what you hear, you can see some other stuff we got there, downloadable content. But be aware that that website, depending on when you're listening, is going away or might already have gone away. And we are going to be switching everything over to our Patreon. The 2HGM Patreon gains you access to just our Discord. We're not asking for much, and we don't have a big like spread of tiers. It's just $2 a month. You join our Discord, you get to participate in conversations with us. You get to suggest directly if you want us to talk about something on the show. We'd probably talk about it on the show. And you get to participate in our live events like the Halloween Spooktacular and other, you know, when we actually sit down to play.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you like us and you like what we do, join us. Yeah, that's about it.
That about it?
Yep. Thank you to the Burning Saviors. Use the song Pond Hillow's Finest as the intro and outro to our show. And we will see y'all next time.
See ya next time.